5 years ago today, I began my service here at West End as a mid-year appointment. And today began my sixth year among you, and I just want to take this anniversary day to offer gratitude to God that I am able to be here and continue to serve among you. So thanks to you and thanks to God. If I were to rename this sermon, you know, these titles get turned in ahead of time, and I may not know completely what I'm going to talk about. I would rename it The Well, The Ram, and The Actress. That should pique your interest. Before the passage you heard Jonathan read, there are two very important stories in Genesis that are not always necessarily linked, but I think they are linked by two things. They have the same kind of threefold structure, but also God intervenes in a particular way and offers blessing. Now, one of those is probably very familiar to you. The other maybe not so much. And we're going to start with the less familiar one. As Abraham and Sarah were aging, though God had promised that they would have a child, there was still no child. And it had been a long time. And they started thinking, well, maybe it's up to us to do this thing and not just wait on God to do it. And so Sarah came up with an idea that Abraham should father a child with her servant girl Hagar, which was not unusual in those days. She would claim that child as her own, and that would be the child of the promise. Well, she got no objection from Abraham. So the plan went into process, and he fathered a child with Hagar, and they named the son Ishmael. Sarah guarded Ishmael like her own son. Until at the age of 90 and her husband at the age of 100 got word that they were going to have a child of their own. And when the child was born, they named him Isaac, Itzak, which means laughter. Because that's a pretty funny idea when you're 90 and 100 that you're going to have a child, right? You got to laugh or cry. They chose to laugh. But once Isaac was born, Sarah began to be jealous of Hagar, began to be jealous of the attention that Ishmael was getting, felt like Ishmael perhaps was not treating his younger half-brother well enough, and so she banishes Hagar and Ishmael from the camp. Now, being banished from the camp in those days, where they lived, meant the likelihood of death. But God comes to Abraham and says, "Now, Abraham, don't worry about Hagar and Ishmael because I have plans for them. I will take care of them." So Abraham sends them out with bread and a skin of water into the desert around Beersheba. Well, the water didn't last very long. And after a time, Hagar decided she could not stay and see her child die. So she put Ishmael under a bush and she left him there. She abandoned him. But she didn't get very far. She broke down in sobs, the scripture says. She broke down in sobs, and apparently Ishmael was crying because God comes to Hagar, just like God had come to Abraham, and said, "Don't cry, Hagar. I have plans for you and your son. He too will be a great nation." And when she's able to clear the tears from her eyes, there's a well in front of her. Either she had not seen it when she got there, or God miraculously provided for her. So, Hagar receives a promise for her child. God redeems and literally saves the life of a child in order for that child to become a great nation. And as you probably know, Ishmael is the forebear that Arab people look back to both Christian and Muslim Arab people, and that specifically Muslim people look back to as their ancestor through whom they are related to Abraham. So if anybody tells you that Jesus wants you to go out and kill Muslims, don't believe them. Not right. Jesus doesn't want you to go out and kill anybody. These are brothers. Because you see, a similar story is told about Isaac. Only in this story, God comes to Abraham and asks him to offer up Isaac as a sacrifice on a mountain that God will show him. Now, you notice God doesn't necessarily say, kill Isaac, but offer him up. So, Abraham gathers the wood and the fire they would need to carry with them, and the donkey and two servants. They travel to the mountain, and when they're inside of the mountain, he leaves the servants behind and the donkey behind, and he and Isaac are walking up the mountain carrying the wood and the fire and the knife. Isaac asks a question. I see the wood, I see the fire, and the knife, but where is the sacrifice? And his father responds with this enigmatic response, God will provide the sacrifice. Now, is Abraham trying to deceive Isaac, to not let him know what he thinks he's going to have to do? Or does he trust God enough that he believes he's not going to have to do it and God will provide a sacrifice other than Isaac? The storyteller leaves it unclear. But when we get to the mountain and Isaac is bound and placed on the altar, God speaks to Abraham, just like God had spoken to Hagar, and said, don't sacrifice your son. I see that you trust me. And so, Abraham sees a ram caught in a thicket. Now, God doesn't say the ram is a substitute for Isaac. But Abraham jumps to that conclusion. Takes the ram and offers up the ram as a sacrifice. And God promises, actually reiterates a promise that has been made before, that Abraham and Sarah's descendants will be as numerous as the stars of the sky and the sands of the sea, and that they will be blessed to be a blessing to all nations. They're not just blessed, and not for themselves alone. They are blessed as we are for one reason and one reason only, to be a blessing to others. All nations. And so you see, God takes the situation of abandonment and saves the life of a child, and that child becomes a great nation. God takes the situation of almost sacrifice and saves the life of the child and turns that child into the ancestor of a great nation. And yet the purpose for all of this saving of lives is not just so they will be blessed, but so they will be the carriers of blessing, the vehicles of blessing for others. Story number three. I have another story for you. In the summer of 1957, Nashville, Tennessee put in a plan to respond to the court decision in 1954 called Brown versus Board of Education to desegregate the schools. Brown discovered that while schools were separate, they were certainly not anywhere close to being equal. And so that desegregation order came down and was heavily resisted throughout the Southeast and in some other places. But Nashville put together what was called the Nashville Plan. And in 1957, they were going to integrate first grade. There wasn't kindergarten in the public school at the time. And then the next year, they would integrate first and second, and then first, second, third. And in a period of 12 years, the schools would be integrated. Not everybody was happy about this. In fact, in Clinton, Tennessee, there were riots. And a number of people who accompanied children to school were beaten severely. They were so fierce that Governor Frank Clements sent in troops to protect the children and to quell the rioters. And one of the reasons that Nashville was able to survive this whole period of time with greater equanimity than most places is its leadership. Governor Clement, for one, who supported the desegregation order. And then there were folks who wanted to mount a second campaign, and they wanted to have the mayor decide that the school system in Nashville couldn't desegregate. Not only did the mayor say, yes, they would, but his son Jay was going to enter first grade in one of those desegregated schools. There were originally 19 African-American children who were going to be attending previously all-white schools. By the time of enrollment, the time of the first day of school, there were only 16. And everywhere there had been pre-enrollment, there were crowds gathered to spit on the children, to call them ugly names. The crowds were often armed. As these first graders, accompanied by their parents and sometimes accompanied by other folks from the community, simply walked into the schoolroom. Well, it was during this time that Will Campbell tells a story in his book, 40 Acres and a Goat. If you don't know this book, it's a wonderful book. Will had moved from Mississippi to Nashville to help work with racial justice issues. And there's an episode in the book in which he talks about spending a night at First Baptist Capitol Hill. That's what we call it now. Then it was the First Colored Baptist Church because there was another Baptist church, and you didn't have to say First White Baptist Church in those days. The pastor he was in the church with was Dr. Kelly Miller Smith. They spent the night there because there had been bombings and threats of bombings. Hattie Cotton School was bombed on the second day of school. And so they felt like somebody should be on the premises, and so this night, Kelly Miller Smith and Will Campbell were there. And Will started talking to Kelly about his daughter, Joy, who was one of those first graders who would be integrating the schools that year. And he asked, how can you send a child like that into a situation where you know people are going to be saying terrible, ugly things? They're going to be spitting on people. There could be physical harm. How can you do that? And Kelly Miller Smith read him the story. He got out his Bible and read him the story of Abraham and Isaac. He said, we don't get to choose the altar. We don't even get to choose the mountain. And then he said that Dr. Smith stopped and he prayed. And he said, I just pray that may the thicket be strong and the ram's horn be long. And he accompanied his daughter to school. And they did help to desegregate the Nashville public schools. But there's another story that comes out of that, which is very interesting. Because where God intervenes in this story is through the attitude of Joy Smith, of the daughter. Let me read you what Will has to say about that. It says, years later, when little Joy Smith was all grown up, an actress in New York City, she explained why she wasn't afraid. I would have been afraid. How about you? She said, I'd heard the talk at home, in church, on the news. I knew that there was something special about my going to that particular school. Because she had always been so secure in the love of those close to her, she assumed that the crowds had turned out in her honor. Wouldn't it be great if we all carried that attitude? She remembered wanting to go back to the door one morning when the mob was especially noisy outside her classroom and do a curtain call. So our actress is born. Even after all those years, it made me feel better. No surprise that her name is Joy, is it? No surprise that she turned into an actress, is it? The blessing that was brought by those people who stepped out, risked their lives or their children's lives, is that today we don't have that kind of color barrier. We don't have to worry about those kinds of things. That's a blessing that gets passed along, just like the blessing of Ishmael, just like the blessing of Isaac and their descendants. And of course, the greatest blessing of all, we believe as Christians, is God coming to us in Jesus Christ and offering himself up. And God takes that and turns it into a great gift, a gift of love. My prayer is that all of us who are so richly blessed, we are so blessed in so many ways that sometimes we are not even aware of the number of blessings we have, even though we may stop to count them. We'll not simply count those blessings and keep them to ourselves, but we'll pass them along to others. And that sometimes the most difficult, demanding times of your life, God can turn into blessings if we just go along. Thanks be to God.